Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and gastronaut. Today, we're looking at sensory science and artificial intelligence. Now, eating is a multi-sensory experience, all of our sensory mechanisms working together to judge billions of combinations of taste and smell, texture, appearance, sound, and assess the underlying nutrition as well. Humans have evolved to become incredibly good at this, which can be a problem for innovators, particularly for those in the plant-based sector, because despite the huge amount of brain work going into developing the taste and texture of plant-based meat alternatives, the bottom line is our senses can often tell that it's a substitute. Now, for some, that's all part of the fun, having new taste experiences. But for many, the lure of animal protein is just so strong, and they want an exact replica, just without the animal. So, could artificial intelligence be the answer? Could we use machine learning to match animal products to meat-free ingredients at the molecular level, to outsmart or at least match our senses and possibly help save the environment at the same time? Well, that's the question the food tech company NotCo have been tackling. And to discover if they've got the answer, I'm delighted to be joined by Karim Pichara, co-founder of NotCo. Hello there, Karim.
Hey. Thanks for having me here.
Brilliant to have you with us. Oh, it's a great, great pleasure. Now, before we start, let's just find out a little bit more about you and your journey into the food sector. You come from a computer science background, I believe?
Yeah, that's true. I'm a computer scientist. I was working prior to co-founding NotCo at the university doing research on machine learning and AI for astronomy. And then this amazing food science problem came across my office in a meeting with Matthias, and everything started there back in 2015. Yeah.
And you say Matthias, can you just fill us in on who Matthias is?
He is the CEO and my co-founder. He started he's the founder of the company at the end, and we and another founder, Pablo, we three started the company back in 2015. Yeah.
Fantastic. Now, what is the mission of NotCo? What is the problem that you're trying to solve? Yeah.
Well, everything started when we realized that the food system was broken, basically. There was zero technology applied in the food system compared, for example, to the amount of technology that was deployed in pharma. And we realized that the planet wouldn't continue for much more if we keep producing food the way we were producing, right? Like having these huge concentrated animal food operations that have hundreds of thousands of animals in many places of the world, you know, adding contamination, unsustainable processes, you know, destroying the land and so many other stuff. Like for how long we could continue that way? Not so much, right? So one thing was, if we manage to remove the animal out of the food equation, we can really contribute to the world. The problem is that eating animal is something we've been doing for years and years, and people lack animal ingredients, and there's no way people will move towards a plant-based alternatives if the flavor and the texture is not as appealing as the animal one. So then we realized that there was a big opportunity to develop a technology that can help us to develop these formulations without the bias of humans or on the human knowledge on how to create food, but relying on data, right?
Okay, so I guess the taste and texture of plant-based meat alternatives has improved dramatically over the past couple of years, but it's been a long time coming, and I still order a plant-based meal in a restaurant, and I'm surprised at how wrong they've got it. So, just looking industry-wide, what's your opinion? Have you been impressed with the level of progress, or is it just simply too slow?
I think there's a lot of progress. I mean, in the ecosystem and the food space, I've seen many ingredient companies doing a lot, and many plant-based companies now already, at least they understand that they had to set the bar very high when it comes to create a final product. Just seeing our own products. I mean, if you try our initial products, the first version of the nut milk, the nut mayo, and the nut burger, and you compare with the ones we have now, it's clearly a big improvement. So I would say that we've been trying many blind tests with many of our products, and our products are performing very well. In many cases, people cannot distinguish between the animal version and our plant-based alternatives. Still, for some people, there is a gap, of course, and nothing is, at the end, flavor and taste is subjective, right? And people have different opinions, but we can see that there is a clear, we are getting closer and closer to the animal targets in all the different food categories we are creating.
And when it comes to replicating animal protein, what are the main challenges? You know, where do you think it often goes wrong?
Yeah, we don't frame the problem as specifically replacing the animal protein. We approach the problem as a whole. We say, you know, we want to create a burger, and a burger is a bunch of things. Protein is one of those. We start from scratch generating formulas to match the whole burger. And that, of course, will include the problem of adding plant-based protein, but sometimes you can support the difference between only the proteins with other ingredients, right? And that's one of the many innovation we had at the beginning. Like most of the companies before NotCo were trying to replace only the specific animal ingredient. And that was narrowing maybe the possible solutions. In our case, when we created the first version of Giuseppe, I didn't know anything about food. So I started 100% relying on data. I represented the animal target as a vector of numbers, and I wanted to match the whole thing without thinking, you know, this is animal, this is plant-based, or this is not animal-based, so I will keep it. No, maybe everything was wrong there and we need to change everything. And then we started getting very, you know, innovating and novel formulations with ingredients that weren't combined before in a formula. Mm.
Now, you've mentioned Giuseppe, so I think it's time to fill us in. Now, I believe that this is the name of the AI that you're using. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Giuseppe is our AI system. Today, a huge system developed by many, many people, engineers, food scientists, chefs, designers, that is going together with people in every different stages of product creation end-to-end, right? So from initial prototype formulation and later scalability, pilot level, industrial level, and all that. At NotCo, we managed to break down the whole product creation process to understand where are the pieces in where we can add technology and add more automation to the different creation stages, bringing novel formulations, novel solutions without the animal playing a role.
And is Giuseppe a constantly evolving affair? I mean, presumably machine learning, it matures, you know, day by day.
Yeah, definitely. It's constantly evolving. Every time you develop technology and you develop one solution, you find another 10 problems. So you need to come up with novel versions and update it, as you see in every different technology, right? So we gather more data. We improve the performance of the algorithms. We redesign the way the algorithms interact with people. We continuously assess the performance with the final foods. And then we, of course, extend also the scope of application of Giuseppe towards more and more, you know, to the end of the part of product creation. When you create products, as you may know, when you start with a prototype formulation at a kitchen level, maybe then you move towards the lab bench level, then the pilot, then the industrial. And as you get closer to the industrial level, it becomes harder to submerge technology because still the industrial machines are not fully digitalized or connected to any systems, right? So, but we are getting closer to, even to that part.
So, and just so that I understand it properly, I presume what you need to do is you need to break down the molecular composition of your animal protein meal in order to be able to create the analog of it, and then you then Giuseppe will analyze that. That's one half of the problem, and then the other half of the problem is then how do you replicate it with plant-based ingredients? Is that essentially how it would work?
Not exactly. I mean, that's part of it. I mean, we have data at different levels, from molecular, from nanometer level, you know, to centimeter level as well. Because when you are Yes, if you wish, like you can compare things at a molecular level, but also later you need to validate them at a higher levels of abstraction. Let's say, like, if you ultimately you want to know if your cheese or your meat is feeling like the real one in or the mouthfeel is the same, you need to go and compare, for example, with machines that evaluate the texture, like with texturometry, texture profile analysis, or viscosimetry. Those machines are way far from the molecular level, but you need that data in order to assess or guide your development, right? But when you work in nutrition or at the protein level, you need to understand the molecular structure of it to sort of know how this molecule will denaturalize over the process. And why? Because we know that those features are the ones that have a big impact on the flavor of dairies. For example, when you are making a cheese, you know that a big part of the feeling we have on cheese flavors of the aged cheese or the texture comes from this specific denaturalization process of the casing, and that's all measured at a molecular level. So depending on what you're doing, you need to go below the inside, you know, the molecular composition, or you need to go outside of it. And we do both. You need to have the whole spectrum.
It's a phenomenal amount of information that's needed, isn't it? I mean, it sounds logical on paper, but presumably molecules react differently when combined, which is why you're talking about sort of texture analysis. And then you've got to extract them from your food source. Does that extraction process alter them? How do you counteract the potential changes caused by the process of creating your product? Presumably there's a codependency on between different ingredients that change the outcome.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a very good question. And we never, in general, we always tend to analyze everything together. We know that the interaction is huge. So it doesn't make so much sense to go and understand an ingredient solely, you know, totally separate from the rest, because we know that whatever we learn there is not going to be true when you combine them with others. And in addition, is not going to be true when you apply different processes. So what we do is, like, we solve everything together. Giuseppe helps us to find a combination of ingredients together with process variables such that the outcome is going to be the one we want. And both the outcome and every single monitoring of the process is done with objective machines. We have machines that give you information from the molecular level and from the structural level. We are extracting that data on the fly while the food scientist is doing the experimentation, and also for the animal-based target. And we, with the system, we make sure that over the iterations, we get closer and closer to the final target in all the variables. I mean, in all this wish list of things we want to achieve for the animal target, thinking on the sensorial, but knowing all the knobs we want to find during the creation, which is ingredients, proportions, processes.
Now, I guess that some foods may be simpler than others. You know, if you want to make a vegan chocolate, you know, you're dealing with thousands, hundreds of thousands of flavor volatiles and various different compounds that interact. These are things that make it delicious. You know, can Giuseppe be aimed at complex problems like this?
Yeah, we know that you're right. I mean, there are products that are much harder than others, especially the ones that have super complex textures, you know, like cheese or a steak, you know, and also some others have a very complex flavor profile. And we are still not perfect for that. I mean, we still need to continue developing the technology, gather more data to be more precise. In the future, we will definitely. I mean, I'm pretty sure. We are able to manage and to use the AI to get very close for in flavor creation. We analyze the volatile compounds in every food. We have, you know, our GCMS machine in the US, here in San Francisco and in Santiago in Chile, and we use it every day to get all the volatile profiles of the targets and of the formulations. So we have a very objective and precise way to conduct the process development, but still when the process or when the food we want to create is too complex, we're not going to be there 100%, and we know that. And But it's just a matter of time when we're going to be able to replicate everything.
Yeah, absolutely. And now you mentioned GCMS. Now I think just for our listeners who may not understand how flavorists work, this is gas chromatography mass spectrometry, and basically you can input some flavor compounds. It will analyze them and give you a readout of certain peaks of different compounds. Have I explained that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And most of the, you know, that one big part of product creation is what comes with the flavors created in the flavor houses, in where you every time you create a product at scale, most of the flavor notes are lost. So you need to sort of add them back, and you need to create that flavor to supplement your formulation. And usually that heavily relies on the data generated by that machine. Not because the first company that has AI technology that is helping to formulate around that data. And we have 3 patents on the usage and analysis of the GCMS data for flavor creation with AI.
Yeah. Now, I guess where it becomes more complicated is that the sensation of eating and drinking isn't just about you know the interaction of 5 different senses. It's also emotional and about morals and about the setting and culture and different things like this. I mean, how far can you take the AI to understand and incorporate the more complex elements of eating?
Yeah, you have 2 approaches. One is go after, you know, understanding the human, which is super complex. And I believe that in the future, we will be able to do that. Another approach, and the one we've been following so far, is, you know, if we have a clear target, if you can get a lot of information, objective information around your target from all the possible, you know, perspectives, texture, flavor, and process and everything, then it's very likely that those variables are going to be a very good proxy for what the human will feel on your own product. So if people like this burger and you match that animal burger, you know, animal-based burger, you go on after matching every single aspect of that burger with your system, that is a very good proxy for what the human will feel when they eat your burger. And I believe that today, since we don't have enough technology to understand all these factors you are mentioning, like emotions, maybe the way we feel flavor is affected by what we ate before, the weather, our mood, and so many things, where we live and all that, you better go after, you know, matching the target. And you face that problem every time you launch a product in a different country. It's the same thing. We launch our products in different countries. If you go and try our milk, our burger, our chicken burger in Brazil, Argentina, or in Chile, Mexico and Canada are different. Why? Because people want different flavor profiles. So we go after the targets we believe that are the most suitable for the locals, and then we need to adapt our formulation with the AI to offer people more tailor-made alternative for their culture.
And how, I mean, do you think you have to overcome the fact that people know that what they're eating isn't real meat? They'll buy a product, it says not milk on it. Do you have to also overcome the sort of latent kind of memory of what a food is, despite the fact that the knowledge kind of contradicts that?
You mean like trying to give some sort of to try to make people understand what they're eating, even though it's not what we pretend?
Yeah, I mean, you know, does something have to be more meaty than meaty when it says it doesn't have meat in it?
Yeah, that's a good question. We believe that the first step to take out the animal out of the equation is make people to move out of the animal foods. And so if you want that, the first step is like, maybe, because if we come and offer something that they don't know what it is, like, okay, this is your new snack. This is your food of the future. This is the plant-based, and you shouldn't eat any other animal, and you should move to this thing. That will not work, right? I mean, they still want their burger. They still want their milk. They still want their chicken nuggets. So let's start from that. Let's start by replacing what people already love to eat with the very tasty plant-based alternatives. If we manage to do that and they move and they feel like they are not doing any sacrifice on flavor, that's the first step. And then we can come and say, you know what, now we can eat different things as well. We can combine different ingredients, and maybe your snack is this one, and this is the name, and this is a new concept, right? And then we can move towards more futuristic way of eating, if you wish.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go into that future. I wonder, Let's go a bit science fiction with this. You know, is there a moment where the metaverse can meet food with this? You know, could you cook up a flavor? You have your own version of a 3D printer at home that could create the thing that you've analyzed and fed the information through the data through to your 3D printer and then print your version of a Tyrannosaurus Rex egg or something.
Yeah, definitely. I feel that in the future we will be able to do that. That the first step is, as you said, it's like if we have a way to 3D print our food at home, then we just need the digital models to send information to the printer. And then if there are ways to, you know, have the food ingredients as part of the ways to create a mix for the printer, we will be able to design our foods. And I'm pretty sure Notco is going to be a pioneer there because we have a complete understanding of foods and the data and all the databases we have structured out there to design food is kind of clear first step. But if we manage to find a way to send food digitally to people, the model of what you want to eat, and then locally they can print that, we could do super crazy things.
Now, we need to ground ourselves a little because let's talk a little bit about, you know, a lot of people will listen to what we're saying and going, oh, my God, that's everything that food shouldn't be. So let's just have a little think about ethics for a second. Is this an ethical path to go down? If plant-based goes in this direction, does it cause any problems at the same time? Does it potentially lock out countries with fewer resources, with less technology and money to be able to follow this?
And from the perspective of food modification, we don't have any ethical issues because we are using traditional ingredients. I mean, we are not, at least today, we are not modifying anything or everything you see in the label is something that you already have had before, you know, in other products. Our main innovations are in the ways we combine them and how you combine them. That's one thing. And regarding the logging or what would happen for countries that they don't have access to the technology, I'm a huge believer of that the technology should be available for everyone. And actually it's one of the things we're trying to pursue now at Notco is to put our technology out there and offer the technology to any other food company such that we can improve the way their own food is being created, make more sustainable products out there and improve their own labels. And that's what we've done with Kraft Heinz, for example, right? That now Kraft Heinz partnered up with us and we are in charge of developing their plant-based portfolio. That's a big thing, meaning like we really want that people everywhere in the world can access better products. But we cannot do this alone. So if we manage to make all these other huge companies to join our journey and we can jump on their shoulders and use their distribution and their way to reach out to millions and millions of people, we will do that. And that's what we are doing. So our technology is not going to be just locked inside Notco. We are actively seeking for partnerships with other food and flavor and ingredient companies to help them. That's one thing. And yeah, that's our philosophy. I don't think we want to leave anyone out of this. And we know that if there is one country somewhere that still have the problem of sustainability, maybe, or the way they eat food or whatever, it's going to affect the whole world. We need to change everywhere in order to make a real solution, right?
Now, just my last question is, there must be one taste or a flavor or an experience. Maybe I know that so many companies are trying to recreate the experience of alcohol and it's proving very, very difficult. Is there something that you think AI will never be able to replicate with an analog version?
Well, I'm a huge believer that there are not limits for technology, honestly. Even if there's something that today we see extremely far, it's just a matter of time. In 10 to 20 years, we are going to be able to do everything with the help of technology. Because the technology is improving in many, many aspects at the same time, you know. It's not just Notco, it's companies improving the ingredients, it's companies improving the machines that are producing at scale, there are companies improving the lab bench, you know, equipment, and reducing their cost and size. So it's so many things getting better at the same time that this thing improves exponentially. faster. So if it took for us 5 years, you know, in making maybe one big step in flavor improvement, it means that in 1 year we're going to make the same level of improvement starting from now. You know, the technology progresses like exponentially, right? So putting all that together, I believe that we are going to be able to replicate everything. And maybe replication is, or just mimicking is not the only approach, right? Maybe there are things that don't need to be changed or replicated. Maybe we don't need to you know, mimic alcohol. I don't know what's the problem we will be solving there. I know there are companies that are trying to make us to feel better after we drink alcohol. Maybe that's another approach. But I feel like at some point, I'm optimistic here, that at some point we are going to go fully sustainable on food, meaning like we are not going to keep adding, you know, or damaging our planet. We will have food for everyone, healthy and sustainable food for everyone. I want to believe that. And with the help of technology, we're going to manage to get to that point in where we're not going to keep destroying the land. People will access the food somehow, and it's going to be food that is good for us. And it's not going to have the need of exploiting or the animal, right? That's what I expect.
Excellent. Well, I love your enthusiasm, and it's been an absolute joy speaking to you. And I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more from you and your company in the future. So Karim Pechara from NotCo, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Happy to jump in again anytime. Thanks.
That's great. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. Remember, if you enjoy the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe via your preferred platform. And if you feel inclined, why not leave us a review? Thank you so much for listening.